So, moving on now to agenda paper six. And before I hand over, I think, to Mateusz to tee up the paper, I just wanted to let committee members know that we knew that this was a very important issue for some of our stakeholders, particularly those who have inflation-linked income, who are setting out to economically hedge their inflation-linked exposures using inflation-linked derivatives, which was one of the reasons why, even though we decided not to do outreach, we thought this was a very important issue that could have result in diversity, and so was important for the committee to consider. And I just wanted to let committee members know that since we've posted this paper, I've received a couple of emails from stakeholders that I could best describe, I think, as very heartfelt emails in terms of raising concerns for the consequences for some of the outcomes in the agenda decision, really flagging the importance of this approach to hedging from an economic perspective, and really expressing a desire that they would be able to achieve hedge accounting in accordance with IFRS standards. Now, obviously, what the committee is being asked to do today is to analyse the application of the requirements as they are in IFRS, but given how particularly strongly held the views were in the messages that I received, I just wanted to reiterate the importance of this issue for some of our stakeholders. And of course, if the committee does decide to issue a tentative agenda decision, it will be really important that we hear from people, particularly those that are potentially directly affected by the tentative agenda decision. And if that's where we land, I'll be sure to contact the people who emailed me to make sure that they're aware of the opportunity to comment. With that, no pressure, Mateusz, I'm handing over to you to tee up agenda paper six.
Thank you very much, Sue. We will now move on to agenda paper six. The committee received a submission about a cash flow hedge accounting about cash flow hedge accounting applying IFRS 9. The submission asks whether a hedge of variability in cash flows arising from changes in the real interest rate rather than the nominal interest rate could be accounted for as a cash flow hedge. More specifically, the request describes a fact pattern in which an entity wants to hedge a floating rate debt with an inflation swap in a cash flow hedge, swapping variable interest rate cash flows on the floating rate debt for variable cash flows based on an inflation index. The submission focuses on the application of the rebuttable presumption in paragraph B6.3.13 of IFRS 9 and whether the rebuttable presumption can be overcome in the case of this cash flow hedge designation. IFRS 9 describes a cash flow hedge as a hedge of variability in cash flows that are attributable to a particular risk. In analyzing the question asked in the submission, we have not focused on whether the inflation component is indeed separately identifiable and reliably measurable in a particular market structure. For the purpose of our analysis, we have assumed that that is the case. We have instead focused on whether the real interest rate component is separately identifiable and reliably measurable in the proposed cash flow hedging relationship. Unlike a currency, which is a uniform measure in which to present economic activity in a particular environment, inflation varies based on the underlying methodology used to determine actual inflation. Cash is by nature a nominal denomination in a particular currency, and each currency unit of cash flow of a financial asset or liability is exposed to inflation risk. Therefore, changes in cash flows in variable rate debt arising from real rate interest rate risk cannot be identified independently of changes in cash flows arising from other risks. Consequently, we have the view that the real interest rate risk component cannot be identified as a risk component as described in para 6.3.7 of IFRS 9 in a cash flow hedge relationship. Paragraphs 14 to 33 of this paper include our analysis on the matter. I will now pause and direct your attention to question one on page 11 of the paper and ask whether the committee agrees with our analysis of the requirements of IFRS 9.
Thank you, Mateusz. Jens.
Thank you, Sue. Thank you, Matthias. I think this was a very well provided description of the fact pattern. And going first, I like to agree with the conclusion of the staff. I do think that cash wage accounting is not permissible for this specific fact pattern. And in relation to the introduction by Sue, I acknowledge that no outreach was taken. I agree with the two arguments that are raised in para 13 of the paper. With being fine with the conclusion, I'd like to raise two minor comments. One is you pointed out that you do not address the instrument, and reading the paper and reading our tentative agenda decision or the proposed tentative agenda decision, I recognize that we reference to LIBOR, and I would propose that we change referencing to LIBOR and rather to a benchmark or a nominal benchmark rate interest, because LIBOR will be away next year. So I think it's not helpful that we reference to LIBOR, but we rather could reference to a nominal rate. And as this is a rather complex issue, I do have some drafting comments to the tentative agenda decision as it is proposed right now to make some more explanation for readers not so familiar with hedge accounting and the issue in that we discuss right here. But I can come back to this later when we discuss question three. So on question one, I fully agree with the analysis based on what is in the standards right now.
Thank you, Jens. Donna.
I'm very sympathetic to the users to our users of IFRS with respect to wanting to get this into cash for hedge accounting. However, I am very strongly of the view that if we were to say that this is a cash flow hedge, that we inadvertently would create an unintended consequence, which is set a precedent that the real rate is indicatively the residual in the equation nominal equals real plus inflation. And I do not believe that it is the purpose of IFRIC to actually set that stronger precedent. So that's the first point. The second point is that the paper is very well written. It is detailed enough to explain why inflation in general terms cannot be the identifiable hedged risk and why it doesn't work in a cash flow hedge. So I commend the staff for the paper. And I do agree with the conclusion that's reached that this unfortunately would not meet the definition for cash flow hedge accounting. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna. Bob.
I also agree with the staff's conclusion analysis here that cash flow hedge accounting is not permitted in this case. I did struggle a little bit in a couple areas. One, the facts around the swap terms weren't very clear in the submission. If it was just receive LIBOR, pay an inflation index, that doesn't really equate. So I think it's got to be more than that. It's probably a pay leg that equates to all the non-principal payments on an inflation indexed bond. So maybe we can make that clear. Also, in the agenda decision, we don't make clear what the proposed hedge designation is. So I think we could do that. But the question I had for the staff that I really wanted to get to is one of the arguments I'm struggling with, and that is what's in the paper in paragraph 29, and then it's repeated in the agenda decision. And it starts out in fact, the cash flows on a floating rate debt do not vary directly with changes in the real interest rate or expected inflation. And I wasn't clear what requirement you're getting to within IFRS 9 in this argument. And so help me out on that.
Yeah, I think what we're trying to say is that, like, now that we are looking at the variability of the cash flows in the LIBOR rate. So the variability due to the real rate of interest. And given that we believe that there might be a link between the real rate of interest and LIBOR, we believe it's not direct enough to actually be eligible as like the designated risk, and that's part of the argument. So
Mr. Schiff, are you talking about the economic relationship criterion in IFRS 9?
Well, I think I'm talking more about that LIBOR cash flows are contractual LIBOR cash flows, which variable with changes in the LIBOR rate, which are fixed daily and are available in real time. Now, in the concept of hedging for the real interest rate risks, we need to see variability on the cash flows based on the hedge risk, which is the real rate. Now, do LIBOR cash flows actually vary directly with changes in the real rate? This is what we're trying to say. It's not a direct link. I think we say that, that the link between those is too indirect because of the methodology which is lagging, I guess, in calculating the inflation basket indexations.
But where, I'm sorry, I'm trying to think through IFRS 9, where's the requirement that there be that direct link?
Well, I think it goes back to, first of all, the definition of a cash flow hedge, which says I'm hedging variability in cash flows because of a specific risk. And therefore, to be able to do a cash flow hedge in that aspect, I need to show that there's variability in my cash flows because of that risk. And so if we think about some of the examples that are on IFRS 9, for example, where it talks about hedging the steel price in the price of a car that I'm manufacturing, it says that link is not directly because you can't show that the cash flows that you are paying for the car is changing every time that the steel price changes. So there's not a direct link between the changes in the risk you are hedging versus the cash flows on the item. And that's, I think, what we're trying to do in paragraph 29 is to say that the hedged cash flows in this regard, being the LIBOR cash flows, do not change directly because of inflation. It might change for other reasons as well, and we cannot separate the changes coming out of the real rate from the changes that are coming out of other reasons that the cash flows of the LIBOR cash flows are changing. So it goes back to the whole, but it goes back to the requirement that the variability or that the cash flows are separately identifiable. In other words, do I have a cash flow or do I have a cash flow component that I can identify and say, this is the component that are changing when my rate is changing?
But I didn't think in order to be separately identifiable that there was a requirement that there be high correlation between the component and the total.
It's not about correlation. No, it's not about correlation.
It says directly, took as correlation, but
no, I think there is no variability in my LIBOR cash flows that is impacted directly by the real rate because inflation is lagging, right? It's not LIBOR might change every month or every 3 months or whatever, but at that point, I cannot show that it's changing because inflation has changed because inflation could be lagging by a couple of months or a couple of weeks or even a year, depending on how regular it's been determined. So it's that direct link between the variability in the cash flows I'm hedging for the risk that I'm hedging it for that we don't think is in this hedge.
It would be helpful to me if in the agenda decision we point out specifically the paragraphs in IFRS 9 that we're getting at in this argument.
Okay.
Thank you, Bob. Lisa.
Thanks, Sue. I'm sympathetic to the comments that you initially made, but I do agree with the staff paper, and I don't think that, as IFRS is written today, that the criteria are met for cash flow hedging, and in particular, I don't believe that the real interest rate risk meets the separately identifiable criteria, and also I don't think the hedging instrument fixes the cash flows, which is obviously the one key thing about having a cash flow hedge. You need to fix the cash flows. So I don't think the swap actually fixes that. My other main real comment is I know this is a very, very complex hedging proposal that we have. And so I have some very detailed comments on the tentative decision that I think possibly maybe could help in explaining the concept a bit better. But I'll wait for question number 3 to go through that.
Thank you, Lisa. Yang Su.
Yeah, like others, I am sympathetic to the people who sent a letter to you but I should say I agree with the step analysis and conclusion. I think the step paper is very well written and very helpful. And the step paper also explains very well why actual or real inflation component cannot be separately identifiable and reliably measured in the cash flow hedge relationship. And I was not able to find out any disagreement with the STEP, the arguments in the STEP paper. So I should say I agree with the STEP analysis and conclusion.
Thank you. Sophie?
I would say the same. Exactly, I think that the paper is quite complete and it is is good, and I don't see another, I don't see any other answer to provide, so I agree with the staff.
Thank you, Sophie. Brian?
Thank you. I became mildly obsessed with this issue because it's such an interesting question. I'm struggling to conclude, to be honest. I traced the history of paragraphs B6, 3, 13, and 14. I went back to the agenda papers from July 2011. I was trying to imagine, see who might be writing financial instruments agenda papers in 2011. And they have a really good explanation, lots of background on the arguments for and against introducing this rebuttable presumption that inflation is separately identifiable, but throughout that piece, I couldn't see anything explicit in that bit of history or in the paragraphs that are cited in the paper that this very slight and narrow relaxation was teed up as relating only to fair value hedging rather than cash flow hedging. So I think I need to find something inherent in the economics to mean that I can definitively rule it out. And I think the key argument in the paper, and this comes back to what Bob was saying, does seem to be paragraph 29 of the staff paper. Bob was talking about, is it possible to explain that in a different way? Is it possible to link it more directly to the requirements in IFRS 9? And I guess I'd repeat that request. I understand what the staff's doing. I understand the history of the issue and why it's something that it's probably very important to keep kind of tightly controlled. But I would be looking, I think, for what seems to be the central argument in paragraph 29 to be tied more explicitly to specific requirements in IFRS 9.
Thanks, Brian. Donna, did you want to come back in?
I did, actually. Thank you. So, yes, I do agree that 29 and the opening paragraph 29 would need possibly expansion to, and I think, and I'm very happy for the staff to interject here and tell me that I'm incorrect, but the whole issue behind inflation hedging essentially is the concept of what I was saying in my opening statement, is that you're making an assumption that you can actually use the equation nominal equals real plus inflation, and that the real is in actual fact a residual. So in other words, you take nominal minus inflation, gives you your real rate. And even though IFRS 9 doesn't have explicit guidance with regards to identifiable, et cetera, using the guidance in 9, the fact that you have to use an equation to get to the real rate, in my mind, is a strong enough argument for it not being separately identifiable. Because separately identifiable is not a residual. It has to be exactly what it says, identifiable. In other words, you must be able to identify it, it must be observable in the market, et cetera. And I think that is most likely, and it really, that is the crux of the practical problems that we've had in practice in hedge accounting and trying to hedge inflation in a cash flow hedge, for example. It's because of exactly that equation, arguing that your real rate is the residual in the nominal plus equals real plus inflation. So I'm not sure for the staff's perspective if you want to maybe expand on that in your in paragraph 29 to kind of give a little bit more clarity to the fact that we don't see a, the fact that we would say that the real rate is a residual in a calculation, and therefore because it's a residual in a calculation, it cannot actually be a separately identifiable element. Is that something that the staff would want to consider in their paper?
Yes, I think we could. I think in our minds, the Fisher equation as such is not sufficient to have the components mm-hmm. that identify reliable, as you point out. The rebuttal presumption in B314, or the example in B314, refers to the market, of a zero coupon real interest rate environment, mm-hmm. which can be used to pinpoint the inflation component in our minds in an example where there is a fair value hedge anticipated. This is how we have interpreted this example in B314. So the market structure actually, and not the Fisher equation, allows you to pinpoint this inflation component in this example mentioned in the standard.
So if we were to expand your paper and to actually give a little bit of clarity on that specifically, I think that would then possibly address the concerns that have been raised by Bob and by Brian on paragraph 29. And in my mind, would actually create a lot more clarity and close down a lot of the debates that are had, at least in my market, with regards to this particular issue, because it's not always that clear that really is the crux of the situation, is that that real rate is a residual of an equation.
Bob, can I ask you quickly, would that help you, Donna's suggestion?
Yes, it absolutely does. I think that is a much better way of coming about the argument in paragraph 29 than the way it is right now starts.
Okay. So Rhianna and Mateus, if you could think about that while the next people talk, then we might come back to it in the tentative agenda decision wording, if that's relevant. Goro. Goro, you're on mute.
Sorry. I agree with the staff analysis that cash flow hedge is not allowed. But honestly speaking, when I read the Agenda Paper 6 first, I wondered if the economic substance is the same in these two transactions, why the accounting for the economically similar transactions could be different. The substance should be emphasized over the form. The accounting rules should not hamper the financial innovation. That was my first reaction. Then, however, I realized that this transaction, in fact, pattern using floating rate debt and inflation swap could be regarded in a sense as a case of, it might be a strong word, but as a case of accounting arbitrage. That transaction of issuing the inflation-linked debt to economically hedge inflation risk on the revenue itself appears to be an accounting arbitrage, exploiting the amortization cost accounting for the debt securities. But this accounting is, in accordance with the IFRS. The inflation-linked debt itself includes the characteristics of the derivatives, but the application of the amortization cost is just because it is regarded as a type of debt securities, hiding the fact that the derivative is embedded in it. And the fact pattern of the submission has just revealed that this fact, that natural hedge using the inflation-linked debt is a synthesis of a debt and derivatives. And this suggests that it creates some kind of accounting loophole to allow the application of the amortization cost method to measurement of the inflation-linked debt. That said, it is in the IFRS, so therefore application of amortization cost method to measure the inflation-linked debt is perfectly in accordance with the IFRS. However, this does not mean, I think, that we should allow the accounting on the similar but different transaction, such as the submissions fact pattern. using the floating rate debt and the inflation swap. And the, in fact, it creates the same economic substance as the natural hedge with the inflation-linked debt. But again, this transaction just revealed that the fact that the natural hedge with the inflation-linked debt is exploiting that amortization cost approach applicable to the debt securities. I think that the, you know, that the this agenda decision may probably create some kind of, you know, repercussion from that the stakeholder who are, you know, affected by this agenda decision. But still, I believe the staff's analysis is the right and only possible interpretation of the relevant IFRS standards. So I support it and staff's conclusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Goro. Carsten?
Yeah, just to say that I also do agree with the staff analysis and conclusions. I like others, I think the argument in paragraph 29 is important, is key. So I do agree with the overall conclusion. I was a little bit confused with the first sentence in paragraph 31, which talks about reduction variability in currency terms. And so I would perhaps suggest when we come to the wording of the agenda decision to replace or link that more closely to the logic in paragraph 29, which in my mind essentially is that, you know, the changes in cash flows and variable rate debt arising from real interest rate risk, that they, you know, they cannot be identified independently of cash changes in cash flows arising from other risks. I think to me that's the key argument. And so I would suggest to, you know, when we come to the wording in the agenda decision to add that. Thank you.
Thanks, Carsten. Jens, did you want to comment?
No, it's not a comment. It's just agreeing with Messiah's, and I'm happy to chime in when we talk about wording of the tentative agenda decision.
Okay, thanks, Jens. John?
Now, I'll just be very quick just to acknowledge that I agree with the staff's analysis and that more specifically the comments that Donna raised. I thought were spot on. So I fully support her points and agree with her comments.
Thanks, John. With that, can I ask the committee question two on page 12? So whether you agree with the staff's recommendation not to add a standard setting project to the work plan? Okay, and Brian also agrees.
I think that's everyone then.
I'm not sure if Goro was.
Yes, yes, he does. Okay, that's everyone.
All right. Before I ask Rhianna, I think, to talk about what she's already heard on words, does people want to come in with additional suggestions on the wording of the agenda decision? Jens?
Thank you, Sue. So I already mentioned that I would rephrase LIBOR, so I would like to delete LIBOR and rather reference to a nominal floating rate, or rather to general, in general, to benchmark interest rate, not to reference to LIBOR. And then on the on page 14, before we start with the sentence with respect to inflation risk, and I acknowledge that Messiah's already mentioned that the Fisher equation is not the right answer to distinguish between nominal and real interest rates. I would like to enter a sentence introducing the concept a little bit more, stating that something like the nominal interest rate can be composed of a real risk-free rate, an inflation premium, and risk premiums for bearing different types of risks, such as default, liquidity, and maturity. So for me, the nominal interest rate has more components, just as being the real interest rate and inflation risk premium. There are other premiums that should be considered in the nominal interest rate. And this is the reasoning why the Fisher equation only is an approximation and does not is is not the right answer to come up. You cannot say nominal minus inflation is not real, because there are other components that should be considered, and the Fisher equation is only an approximation. As it only an approximation, the whole scenario does not work out for hedge accounting. And this would be my proposal to add this sentence for other readers not so familiar with Fisher equation and what we're talking about, nominal rates and real rates, that we right in the beginning just put a definition, which is, I did some research. This is a general definition of nominal interest rates. There could be other components, but with stating it that such as we open up that there are other components in nominal interest rates, and give an explanation for the reader why we conclude that this is not an eligible risk. I think these are my major comment. In addition, I would like to delete the reference to Eurozone, because I don't think we need the reference to Eurozone on page 14. And with regard to the to page 15, it's a matter that is addressed in para 29. If we would add in the third sentence, first paragraph, which reads consequently changes in the real interest rate or expected inflation, and if we add there in brackets, both are components of the nominal rate, lead only to different allocation, I think then it's understandable that this is a mathematical equation. And as these are two components of the nominal rate, there would be no change in the total cash flows. But I think if you want me to, I can put this in and highlight these recommendations, because I think it was a lot of text what I'd like to enter into the tentative agenda decision. But basically, there are three points: deleting LIBOR, putting an explanation on what is the nominal interest rate, and putting some more guidance in or some explanation to some of the rather difficult sentences. Thank you, Steve.
Okay, thank you, Jens. Carsten.
Yeah, just one in addition to the wording suggestion I already made, just one more suggestion, which is in the last paragraph on page 15, the sentence that starts with the committee therefore concluded that to meet the requirements in IFRS 9 for cash flow hedge designation, individual cash flow streams based on the identified risk components need to be interchangeable in the respective currency. I thought it would be better to refer, you know, I wasn't quite sure what interchangeable means, and I thought it would be better to refer to that the identified risk components need to be identifiable in currency terms or nominal terms. So that would be my other wording suggestion. Thank you.
Thanks, Carsten. Bob.
Yes, my other editorial suggestion was on page 14, where we quote paragraph B63.13 of IFRS 9, the first sentence there is fine, and then it goes on, quotes the second sentence of that paragraph, says, however, in limited cases, blah, 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 you can. I was wondering if we get rid of that second sentence, because we don't expand upon it, we don't really use it, and I was thinking that just might cause more confusion. I don't think it's needed.
Okay, thanks, Bob. Lisa had a number of detailed drafting comments, which I think she shared with Rhianna beforehand. So, Rhianna, I'm relying on you to, you know, pick those up as relevant as you go through the tentative agenda decision, rather than getting Lisa to walk through them all again because of the dense nature of the subject. So can I hand over to you, Rhianna, to walk through what you've heard today and what you've heard offline with suggestions on the wording?
Sure. And I just have to say that today was sort of challenging for my skills to multitask, so to listen and to make notes and capture the specific wording. So I might have to go back to the recording after the meeting to make sure I capture the words exactly, but I'm hoping I can at least reflect the concepts that you've highlighted. So I think in terms of the agenda decision, we've got Jens' suggestion to replace LIBOR with a benchmark interest rate, which is quite a topical thing, so we can do that. I think the biggest changes might be on page 14 of the agenda decision. So we'll, in the discussion, we'll highlight the link or the relationship between a nominal rate and the components being the real rate and the inflation premium plus the other risks, which then ties into the wording that Carsten suggested about the cash flow variability needs to be separately identifiable from variability caused by other risks, which we'll bring in on page 15. I just have a slight hesitation to talk too much about the Fisher-Price equation, because it's not the only equation there is to determine inflation, and it's also not determining actual inflation. It is used to forecast inflation, getting expected inflation in the future instead of determining what is the actual inflation rate at the date that the cash flows occur. But we can definitely capture the relationship between the nominal rate, the real rate, insurance and or inflation and the other components, which will then link in with Donay's comments around the real rate really then becoming the residual, which means it's not, you know, the residual is not a separately identifiable risk. So we'll reflect that. In the last paragraph on page 14, I think we had, you know, a couple of suggestions there to make it clear that, and it's linking to Lisa's comments as well, that in the second sentence where we talk about each currency unit of cash flows is exposed to inflation risk, and then maybe in brackets add, i.e. both principal and interest, because I think that is also one of the key arguments in the paper, is that it's not just the, you know, interest cash flows or the LIBOR cash flows that are exposed to inflation. It's actually all the cash flows on the instrument. So we'll make that. Then on page 15, some of the comments we've received indicated that people might want to delete or think we should delete the paragraph starting on page 15, where the committee also observed that the cash flows of a floating rate debt. So maybe just, I don't know if everyone agrees, but I think we can delete that paragraph because it doesn't really add, I think, to the overall conclusion, if people are happy with that. And it might also then limit consequential effects of that. Then just then in the last paragraph, to reflect Carsten and others' comments around the cash flows or the risk component being separately identifiable in currency terms, and that the changes in the cash flows in the variable rate debt coming from this hedge risk cannot be identified independently of changes in the cash flows of variability in cash flows coming from other risks. And I forgot to mention Bob's comment on the first paragraph under the subheading on page 14 to delete the second part of that sentence. That refers to paragraph 6.3.13 in IFRS 9. I think that's the main comment.
Brianna, just to, at the risk of confusing us further, Mary's just flagged to me that while I agree that it's sort of a little bit risky having a reference to LIBOR when we know that it's in the departure lounge, it does at least make it clear that we mean a rate that everybody's sort of familiar with, and there's no questions about observability and all of these things, where these new rates have got separate, you know, different complicated questions because they're new and there's not established markets, etc. I wonder whether another way of dealing with it would be to say sort of a benchmark interest rate such as LIBOR, so that it's clear that we're not only talking about LIBOR, which I think would help with Jens's point, which is a fair one, but it doesn't sort of muddy the waters with the question about we're not getting it, you know, it's not an observable rate because it's a new rate like a SOFR or something like that. It's so not to complicate or divert attention.
Work for me, Sue.
Would that be okay for you, Jens?
Yes, it's okay for me.
Okay. So with that, throwing that in there at the end, so based on the adjustments which Rihanna has made, can I get a show of hands from committee members on who supports the tentative agenda decision?
I see everyone but not Brian.
Yeah. And Brian doesn't support.
Okay. Okay, so that's 12.
Can you not see him because he's on the telephone? He is not supporting. Okay. Thank you very much. Well done, guys. Very meaty issue. Thank you, Rihanna and Mateus.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so that means I think now, Rihanna, we move on. Sorry, not Rihanna, Petrina, we move on to the work in progress paper.
Yes.